Hello and welcome to Inside Education. My name is Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. For our final programme of 2010, we have invited a panel into studio to discuss the recently released PISA results, which suggest that the performance of our 15-year-olds in reading, mathematics and science literacy is not as good as it used to be, and definitely not as good as we would like it to be. PISA is an acronym for the Programme for International Student Assessment. It is an internationally standardised assessment that was jointly developed by 65 countries and administered to 15-year-olds in schools in all of those countries. International tests of 15-year-olds were previously carried out by PISA four times in 2000, 2003, 2006 and 2009. The 2009 results were released just 2 weeks ago. I'm going to begin by introducing the panel that we have for you today. Dr. Jude Cosgrove is a research associate at the Educational Research Centre in Drumcondra, and she is one of the co-authors of the Irish section of the PISA report. She is an experienced researcher who has been involved with all the Irish reports on PISA. Dr. Etna Kennedy is a teacher educator in St. Patrick's College, Drumcondra, where she specialises in literacy education. She has a broad range of teaching experiences in Ireland and the United States, including time as a reading specialist in a New York City school. Jackie O'Callaghan is the PRO of the National Parents Council post-primary and on the National Executive of the Council. She is a mother of four children, two of them still at second level, in the vocational sector. Professor Sean O'Rean is a professor of sociology at the National University of Ireland, Maynooth. He has written two books, The Politics of High-Tech Growth and The University and the Public Sphere After the Celtic Tiger. He wrote an article in last Monday's Irish Times entitled Don't Blame Immigrants for Decline in Education Standards. My colleague Barry Hennessy is a post-primary teacher who will join in the conversation with some questions for our panel during the programme. So I'm just going to begin the discussion by highlighting some of the main findings of the latest PISA results. First of all, the good news in the study came in science literacy, where the average score of Irish 15-year-olds was above the average score of students in OECD countries. Among the 34 OECD countries, the average mark of Irish students was 14th highest. Not such good news, however, in mathematical literacy, where Irish students' average mark was below the OECD average. Our position was 26th out of the 34 OECD countries. Although disappointing, we have known from our leaving certificate results that there were problems here, and we have launched Project Maths as an initiative to respond to that problem. But more surprising were the results in reading literacy. In 2000, among OECD countries, Irish 15-year-olds scored the fifth highest average mark on the test. By 2009, we had slipped down to 17th among 34 OECD countries. We are now among the average OECD performers, whereas we had been among the above average performers. The fall in scores was 31 points, which is the highest fall by any country over this period of time. If we translate the results to human terms, we find that one in four of our 15-year-old boys got a score which suggests that their reading literacy is not good enough to participate effectively in society or in further learning. One in nine girls had scores suggesting that they would have similar problems. So we're going to now just start discussing the problem, and I'd like to begin by addressing a question to you, Jude. How concerned should we be about these results?
Well, I think, as our Taoiseach, Minister of Education, has indicated, that we should be concerned indeed. As probably the audience is aware, there has been considerable media commentary on the issue, and the Taoiseach has indeed released recently released a national literacy and numeracy strategy to try and address these issues. I think one of the key points that we should bear in mind is that we shouldn't put 100% weight on the results of one single survey, because, I mean, I won't get into the technical details, but this is one survey done at one point in time. So while the results indicate a decline, we need to look at other evidence, but certainly some concern is warranted.
Okay, and just if we just take a practical part of the test, how do you practically compare the reading literacy of Irish students, say, with Chinese students who have, you know, different language and different characters in their alphabets?
Well, I suppose that's quite a difficult question. The PISA study is generally regarded as the most rigorous international survey of its kind, and at every stage of the survey there are quality assurance procedures. So, for example, when they the test items or the test questions are translated, they're checked to be comparable in different countries. But international experts generally agree that this having fully comparable results across 65 countries of such rich and diverse cultural bases is very complex, and it's an evolving area.
Okay. And Etna, Jude said there that, you know, we have to be careful about the results and it's just one test. And we have known about our problems in maths for many years. Were these results in literacy a big surprise to you?
Well, I think I was certainly surprised at the magnitude of the drop that occurred, like a 31-point drop and a drop in our rankings from 5th place down to 17th. That certainly surprised me. But I think Jude is right to exercise caution in interpretation of the results because, as she says, it's one survey result at one point in time, and there's no corroborating evidence.
For example,
the National Assessments of English Reading and Mathematics, those results are showing that standards haven't changed at all. So I think we do have to be careful. But at the same time, we do know at the primary level, for example, that there are difficulties, particularly in relation to social justice and disadvantage. There are big gaps between the results of children from disadvantaged schools versus the children who are not in disadvantaged schools.
Yeah, and Barry, you're going to come in there.
Well, absolutely. I suppose the question I would be asking, for example, is to the panel in general, but I suppose maybe perhaps to Professor Sean O'Rean in particular, is to what extent do these findings reflect wider inequalities in Irish society?
I think the pattern of results tracks pretty well the kinds of inequalities that we see in other studies. You know, quite specifically around class differences. And actually gives us, I think, some very useful information as well in terms of those class, socioeconomic class differences are linked not just to economic resources, but also to kind of cultural resources. There's a lot of very valuable information on the availability of books in the home and so on, reading practices and so on, that really, you know, gives us useful information in terms of what are the mechanisms that are translating, you know, inequalities in the broader society into schools. And, I mean, the gender pattern is a little more complex across the subjects, but I think it does track most of what we know already in terms of gender differences around reading and maths, and they're kind of reversed for both of them. The other thing one of the points I really drew out of it was that for students from disadvantaged backgrounds, they do particularly poorly if they are from, you know, going to schools where a high proportion of the students are from disadvantaged backgrounds. So, you know, there's a reasonably strong evidence there in terms of the kind of a concentration of disadvantage and the importance of tackling that, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, it would almost make you wonder about, you know, there was a policy in the United States many years ago where for segregation issues, they bussed black children and white children to different schools. And, you know, do you think it would be worth considering bussing disadvantaged children to other schools to have a greater mix of students in schools?
Well... I don't know. I mean, it's certainly worth... I think I would actually put more emphasis on just maintaining the kind of the core inclusive schooling. And, I mean, there's going to be, hopefully, a lot of new schools built over the next 10 years. And it'll be crucial to have those kind of built on a community basis where they can draw in...
It's an enrolment policy issue then, is it, Sean, to an extent?
It's enrolment. I mean, and those kind of issues are complex because of the structure of Irish schooling with single-sex and then the patronage issues and so on. And it's you know, building the schools that can incorporate whole communities into them. I think there are some issues issues in terms of access in some places, and there's also issues in terms of in specific areas in terms of private schools and better off students leaving the public school system. But I wouldn't be inclined to overstate that either. I mean, we have quite a robust public system that really, I think it's a question of kind of supporting that and developing it.
Jude?
May I just elaborate on Sean's point? I fully agree with everything he said, but I think that there's something that is going on in our education system that we should be concerned about that isn't directly looked at by PISA, which is the streaming and grouping of students. There's existing research by the ESRI, or Economic Social Research Institute, to show that grouping and streaming from early in the system can have a quite a negative effect on particularly on lower achieving or more disengaged students, and particularly boys, and particularly more disadvantaged boys. So I think with PISA, again, I'll reiterate the point that we shouldn't be over-relying on one survey result, but I think we should be joining up different results of research that we have and looking at this issue of within schools, what is going on within schools, and what is the impact of grouping students in this way.
And another point that Sean mentioned there was the performance of boys versus girls. And one of the findings that was consistent across all the countries in PISA was that in every case, girls outperformed boys. And why do we know why that is?
Well, it could be a function of the way the test was made, how it presents itself to boys and girls. People who are listening may or may not be aware of the fact that in PISA 2009, which is the main focus of our discussion at the moment, there was an optional electronic assessment of reading. And we suspect from looking at observing students being tested with the paper-based test, which is the main focus of the results being discussed in the media and so on at the moment, and the electronic test, results of which won't be published until June 2011, we think that boys are much more engaged in the electronic test. So it could be partly a function of differing ability or proficiency, but also partly a function of differing levels of engagement or interest in what the students are being presented with.
So can I just check then, so the results we have at the moment are only the paper-based test results. So they will have to be combined with the electronic results later?
Well, I believe the plan is to keep the results separate, but we will be able to compare how students did on the electronic test with the paper-based test.
Okay, so that would be interesting. Jackie, in the National Parents Council, have any parents contacted your office in relation to these results?
Well, I suppose, Sean, to be fair, in the whole picture of things, a lot of parents wouldn't be aware of PISA. But, you know, and when the results are going well, you know, that looks fine. But now maybe with the result not being so good, maybe parents are now going to wake up, and there would be a very big cohort of parents who would be quite aware of the PISA study, but there would be people who would not be aware of it as a rule. And so therefore anything negative will draw some sort of attention that it doesn't normally get if things are good. You know, we're a great nation to knock, and if things are going well, we'll row away. But then if it goes wrong, we're quite fast to come in. So I think as parents that do know about the PISA would have grave concerns about it. And I do think the contrast between the paper and the electronic based is a very good issue. And, you know, you're talking about how can parents help and introducing books at a young age, and everything being electronic with Sony readers, etc., etc. Now, what do you give them? Do you give them the paper book or do you give them the electronic book? You know, so there are loads of things that you can go around it. But their parents would be concerned, I would think, on that, because, you know, it is a 31-point fall is a huge drop.
It definitely is. And one of the other findings was that, you know, while reading for enjoyment helps improve reading literacy, 42% of Irish students said that they never engage in reading for enjoyment. Does that surprise you as a parent?
It doesn't surprise me at all, because I have four kids, and of the four of them, I have one non-reader, and he is into music. He will read songs, he'll write songs, he'll do everything else. But if it's between the pages and the covers of a book as such in a structured way, he has no interest whatsoever. So, you know, again, from a parent's perspective, you give them all the same books when they're small, and they either have it or they haven't, or they either develop the love of it. And my other three kids would have a great love of books and reading. So, you know, it's very hard to say to somebody, look, read those, you know, it's going to do you great stead later on in life, and you will love it if you get into it. Like, that's just not the case, unfortunately. But it doesn't surprise me that there are a lot of children out there who don't engage in reading for enjoyment anymore.
Yeah. And in terms of the decline in our score, Jude, what can we learn from other countries about the causes of our decline over the 10 years or the 9 years?
Oh, that's kind of a hard question to answer, because I suppose our own work in the Educational Research Centre where I'm based has been focusing on Ireland. There has been a general decline in the percentage of students who are report reading, you know, in their leisure time. But what that measure doesn't capture is whether students are interpreting that question as to mean whether they read a book, like a paper book, or whether they're reading online. We don't know.
Yeah.
So I can't comment too much on what we can learn from other countries. I mean, from looking at just the case of Ireland, if I might just focus
on that,
there have been some massive demographic or, well, important demographic changes or changes in the student population. I mean, if you go into your average classroom now compared with a decade ago, you might have one or two students from Eastern Europe whose first language isn't English. You might have a couple of kids with special educational needs. So our student population is becoming much more diverse, which we have to welcome. Now, the other change that we have is, well, a couple of other changes. There could be more that I'm not thinking of right now. We've got a decrease in the number of students that are leaving school early. And these students are typically disengaged, lower achieving students. And we have an increase in the number of single parent families. And we know from looking at the figures that the children from single parent families tend to do less well. So all of those things combined can account for some of the decrease.
Could we just take a look at that in somewhat more detail, perhaps, because the issue, obviously, of the changing demographics of Irish society, particularly the arrival of immigrants, you know, that was an angle that was put out by the Department of Education by way of explaining the decline in the PISA scores on literacy. But Sean O'Rean, in writing in the Irish Times last Monday, you, to put it mildly, suggested real caution in terms of trying to pin the change on immigration.
Yes, and actually I wasn't really responding to the department. I thought the department was trying to be quite careful about how they approached the issue. But, I mean, certainly some of the initial coverage, I think, you know, the immigration question was kind of highlighted. And, I mean, there is an issue for students who have who don't speak English at home, who are first-generation immigrants. And there's certainly a difference in the scores there. Although, interestingly enough, it's less of a gap than on the class side, significantly less. And I suspect, you know, when we get a chance to look at the figures in more detail, that gap will narrow further because there's a class effect kind of rolled into that. But the other issue is, I think immigration is just, it's a volatile issue, and it's easy for people and commentators in the media and so on to, you know, to look to that, and that will drive out all the other questions, you know. And
but nonetheless, I mean, there have been some fairly reputable studies done, interpretations carried out on PISA scores over the years. There was a major study carried out in Germany about 6 years ago that, as you have indicated, it drew a parallel between whether immigrant children speak the national language of the country they've immigrated into or at home or if they don't, and that where they don't, their educational outcomes tend to be significantly impacted.
Well, I mean, I think the immigration context in Germany and in Ireland is probably quite different. But, I mean, if we just look at the results of the PISA 2009 in Ireland, the percentage of students we're talking about is, I think, 3-4%. It just simply doesn't, you know, add up statistically that they would explain the gap. And if you just look at students who are born in Ireland who are English or Irish speaking at home, you know, you're looking at a similar kind of decline. So it's quite possible that it may in fact be working the other way, that there could be general processes at work that are playing themselves out. You know, there might be quite general causes behind this, if the decline holds up, that are actually playing out among immigrants, you know, rather than the other way, that it's an immigrant issue that is, you know, in a sense affecting the national picture. Because actually the thing that really struck me across this, and, you know, normally the sociologist is the person introducing the inequality into the story, but the thing that struck me was that the decline was across the entire spectrum, and in a sense, particularly striking at the top. In a sense that, you know, the percentage of students in the top two bands of achievement on reading and on maths, as far as I understand it, you know, had almost halved, which is really a striking finding. And in a sense, to me, that's probably the most worrying indicator in terms of, you know, raising questions about what might be going on.
And that's something that's often hidden in an average mark, where, you know, you could have an average mark where everyone is still very equal or unequal. But what has happened here is our high performers have decreased and our low performers have increased.
Yeah, that's definitely it.
Ethna Kennedy, another thing that has changed in the last 10 years, or since 1999, I suppose, is the new English curriculum at primary school. Mm-hmm. Do you think that could have any, could that explain in any way what has happened?
Yeah, certainly there have been changes in curriculum in the last 10 years, but I think if Jude would probably support me on this, I think the findings, we don't have any changes in terms of the national assessments of English reading, and if curriculum were at fault, you might expect to see a drop in our standards in relation to that. In saying that, in terms of the curriculum, primary school curriculum is a very broad and balanced curriculum, and there has been talk, I suppose, in recent times about curriculum overload and teachers feeling that there's not enough time to get through all the subjects and cover content. And in relation to the English curriculum, in particular, I think sometimes the structure of it has been called into question. Teachers don't find it as easy to navigate or to pull out the essential skills and strategies that need to be taught. So I think the curriculum probably needs to be updated in terms of English, because there are some gaps and weaknesses in it.
So there's kind of two issues you're drawing on there. One is the breadth of the number of subjects and the amount of work to be done, but also then that there may be particular problems in how the current English curriculum is structured. Jude, you were going to come in there.
I might just add a third issue into the mix here, which is the amount of time which is devoted to the instruction of literacy. Which has been found in previous national assessments, as Aetna and others will be aware, it's lower than has been recommended, particularly if you compare with American studies that are devoted to increasing literacy levels of lower achieving students in poorer areas. And that, I think, that is an issue that really needs to be taken up on. What else was I going to say?
I think time is a critical issue.
Yeah.
How time is being used. Like, typically internationally, for example, in the United States, they might spend 90 minutes to 2 hours on literacy instruction to help accelerate achievement for those children. Because if they're coming in behind and they just get the same level of instruction as everybody else, they never get the opportunity to catch up. So you need an opportunity for acceleration to occur. But I think it's really important that time is used well, and that there is evidence to suggest that children in disadvantaged schools often get a qualitatively different experience of literacy instruction than children in other areas. And sometimes there's more focus on skill and drill and less opportunities for children to read connected texts and to read for fun, for enjoyment, for, you know, so there's a whole range of issues there.
And when you mention time, one of the things just strikes me, I'm just wondering, and again, this might be putting you on the spot even a little bit, to what extent does literacy in Irish help literacy in English, because presumably the test took place in English. Jude is nodding. Yeah. So obviously Irish students spend a lot of time on Irish. Would their literacy there help them in their English test, I wonder? Is that maybe that's just a question to leave there, but because do you know anything about that, Aetna?
Well, I'm sure there's research to suggest that knowledge in more than one language helps support development in another. Yeah. So I'm sure it does contribute. Right. To what extent, I wouldn't be sure.
I think, though, as well, we've got to think about the amount of consistency between languages. I mean, if Irish is taught in a very different way to English in certain schools, it's not going to transfer, the knowledge and skills are not going to transfer from one to the other. So that's maybe something else to think about.
Okay. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website, which is insideed.com. Okay. We're discussing the recently released PISA results, focusing on the literacy results where Irish students' average score declined and also where our position declined. So what I'd like to do now for the last 5 minutes of the programme is kind of find out what can actually be done about this problem. So Jude, if I start off with you relatively briefly, what lessons should we be taking from these results in order to do things better, and what has the department already announced that it's going to do?
Thank you very much. I think that, first of all, I want to reiterate that this is one survey result that we should take heed of, but not necessarily peg all of our bets on, if you like. And it's very complex, even comparing across countries. Having said that, the declines appear serious. We do need to worry. We do need to look at other surveys, other research evidence, or other education experiences to learn what we can do to improve the system. Now, the department has released, as of late November, a literacy and numeracy strategy, which seems to myself and colleagues at the Educational Research Centre to be a very comprehensive strategy, because it covers, in my view, very importantly, not only primary and post-primary levels, but also preschool levels. I think it's crucial to get in there early. So that's important. The other main issue, two main issues I would highlight are boys and disadvantage, that we need to continue to tackle those issues and get a better understanding of them. Thank you.
Etna, what can an individual teacher or a school principal, if they asked you for advice on how they could improve literacy in their classroom or in their school, what would you say to them?
Well, that's a tough question to
answer. In about a minute.
Well, I think the most important thing, I suppose, is to have a look and see, do an audit of what's currently happening in school. How is time being used? What kind of resources do you have? How closely are your teaching practices and approaches that you're using in line with the research base? We have a huge body of research on how to teach literacy effectively. So I think there's a number of issues that need to come into play.
And quickly, how can teachers access some of that research on literacy?
Well, there's a vast array of you could look at the international research base. You could look to the Reading Teacher Journal in America, the Literacy Journal of the United Kingdom Literacy Association, the Reading Association of Ireland has publications also. So there's a range of places the teachers can go, as well as, of course, to access continuing professional development.
Shauna Reid, in particular, is this whole issue a societal problem where the inequality is really too heavy a burden for schools to carry by themselves?
Well, I think that is a huge issue, and it's particularly an issue now in the next 3 to 4 years, where we have a 4-year plan, but the 4-year plan may, what we run the risk of is we get the country back on its feet and in some kind of fiscal state, and we've meanwhile let all of our investment in our social and human assets just kind of wither away over the 4 to 5 years, and that will particularly have an effect on the disadvantaged pupils who are relying particularly on institutional resources. They are relying more on schools. They have fewer kind of the cultural resources and so on that translate into high reading attainment and maths attainment at home. They rely more on the schooling system for it, and I mean that it's vital that those are protected.
Thanks, John. And finally, Jackie, what advice would you give to parents listening this evening who would like their son or daughter to do better at reading?
I suppose as a parent, I have a great love of books and I've passed it on to all my children. Their uptake is entirely personal. But I do think it's vitally important that parents give that, because I think now I have older children as well, and employers are now looking for handwritten job applications. And, that's the first thing an employer or prospective employer sees is your handwriting and your composition of the letter. So I think it's vital, absolutely vital.
And we're going to give you the last word on that for this evening. So that's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email us on insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to all our panellists on this week's programme, Jude Cosgrove, Etna Kennedy, Jackie O'Callaghan and Sean O'Rean. As well as asking questions, Barry Hennessy looked after sound on this week's programme. We're taking a week off next week, so we wish all our listeners a great Christmas and a 2011 filled with learning. Until the same time, 2 weeks from today, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.